This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Considering that Nigeria is the poverty capital of the world, if it continues that trajectory, many more people will die of hunger and even other preventable diseases like COVID.
That's a Nigerian fiscal governance expert on the balance needed between minimizing the risks of the coronavirus and economic crisis from a lockdown. Details coming up also. Burundi's opposition leader Agathe Rwasa is challenging the results of last week's presidential election. And 26 Bangladesh and 4 African migrants were killed near Tripoli in a revenge attack. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with a top story. The family of South African who was allegedly beaten to death by soldiers enforcing COVID-19 lockdown restrictions has reacted with outrage to a leaked army report that says they are not liable for his death. 40-year-old Collins Khosa died on April 10th in Alexandra Township in Johannesburg following an altercation with security forces. They had accused him of drinking alcohol in public, an offense under emergency regulations to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. Darren Taylor reports.
Witnesses say soldiers and police officers strangled Khosa, slammed his head against a cement wall and a steel gate, and hit him with the butt of a rifle. Afterwards, he couldn't walk or talk and began vomiting. A few hours later, Khosa was dead. A post-mortem described the cause of death as blunt force head injury. But VOA has seen a South African National Defence Force, or SANDF, report that concludes that the injuries on the body of Mr. Khosa cannot be linked with the cause of death. The Board of Inquiry report further states, the Board concluded that the death of Mr. Khosa was not caused by the SANDF members nor police officers. During a media briefing, Minister of Defence Nosiviwe Mapisa Nqakula said the only official ruling on the matter was a judge's decision to suspend the accused soldiers.
That has been done. It is a correct decision. But anything else which relates to whether this is a murder case or not is a matter which I would rather not comment on until such time the all investigations have been concluded.
The Military Board of Inquiry also found that Khosa and his brother-in-law were responsible for the altercation with security forces, as the two had been provocative and had undermined two female soldiers. The report says the soldiers merely pushed and slapped Khosa when he refused to comply with their orders. Military spokesman Sipiwe Dlamini says he's not aware of the report.
I don't know why is it in the news. Why are you looking for it? I don't work for newspapers. I don't know why they're following it. You should ask them. I don't know.
You are the head of communications, Mr. Dlamini, are you not?
I am, and I'm telling you that matter is still sub judice because the case is not complete.
Why is it reported that the officers are exonerated?
Who's reporting that? Ask that person who reported that. Not me. The case is not complete.
So then obviously,
that's what I'm saying.
No, then what I'm saying is obviously they are not exonerated.
Dlamini refused to explain why a military inquiry had cleared the soldiers of wrongdoing if the investigation hadn't been completed and it had not interviewed any witnesses. Pukki Grief is the head of the South African National Defence Union, which represents thousands of soldiers. Grief, who's also a lawyer, says it's clear that the army command hasn't followed due process.
Apparently at one stage there was an investigation, but what should be done is there should be a formal board of inquiry in terms of the Defence Act, which should make findings and recommendations, should include recommendation that people be charged in a military court, except of course if it's a murder charge, then the military court will not have jurisdiction, then that will be trialed in a criminal civilian court.
Standing on the sidelines is Khosa's widow, Nomsa. She says she'll never forget the smiles on the faces of the soldiers as they allegedly assaulted her husband.
Collins is gone. He's not coming back. So we also like to see them behind bars. Behind bars for life.
Nomsa doesn't understand all the legal procedures involved in the case. But like many South Africans, she no longer trusts the army and police to responsibly enforce COVID-19 regulations. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A South African music producer's latest song is making international headlines. Max Horrell's When People Zol is a remix of the country's Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs explaining why the ban on tobacco remains in place during the lockdown. Locals have found the tune hilarious because Zol is South African slang for a hand-rolled cigarette or cannabis joint. From Cape Town, journalist Vicky Stark spoke to Harrell for VOA and listened to some of the song.
When people saw it, and they shared that song. When people saw it, and they shared that song. When it comes to cigarettes, tobacco products and related, that we should not open up the sale of products. And the reason are health related, but also when people saw, they put saliva on the paper and they share that song.
Harold says his song, which features the voice of South Africa's Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, has had millions of views online since its release almost 3 weeks ago.
Well, in terms of the numbers that I've seen across TikTok, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, it's sitting on about, and YouTube, it's sitting on about 15 million views at the moment. It's done a lot for the brand. It's grown my brand a lot online. And I'm very grateful about that. I feel like it's been very successful, unexpectedly though.
Why unexpectedly?
Just because I made it as a funny little extra piece of music like I usually would, and it just took off. I didn't realize that it would resonate with so many people. And yeah, you can't really predict virality. Or going viral. It kind of just happens sometimes.
And what happened when the minister heard the song?
He tweeted about me asking or saying, who is this Maxwell fellow? We just need to talk. And then I responded to that tweet. And so she followed me back on Twitter, and then we had a brief conversation in direct messages in DM on Twitter. And she was very nice. She basically just said thank you for, not thank you. She said, well done for inspiring the nation and empowering the nation in this difficult time. Hope you continue to use your platform to essentially do good. And then I responded asking if she wanted to be in the music video, and she didn't reply.
Okay.
<Yeah.
laughs> Are you going to try and convince her to be in the video?
Of course.
The 23-year-old, who's been making music for 5 years, has also dropped a remix featuring South Africa's police minister, Bheki Cele, titled Where Did You Get the Cigarettes? But without going into detail, Harold says he didn't mean for this to go viral.
That was honestly just, I'm kind of embarrassed to put that out because it's very like subpar musically. But yeah, again, as I said, you can't predict what goes viral.
So where to from here?
I'm just busy using this boost in my platforms to reshape my brand, and reposition my brand in the modern climate of the music industry and how things are going to change. And just try and treat it more as a business, try and balance the passion and business aspect of it so that I can, actually make a living from it.
He says there's been a drastic change in the music industry now with the global threat of COVID-19 making live performances impossible.
I'm adjusting to those changes. I feel like I'll keep my humorous side of my brand, but in terms of the music, I'm going to start switching that up a bit.
This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
Burundi's opposition leader, Agathe Rwasa, is challenging the results of last week's presidential election, claiming voter fraud was committed. According to Reuters, Rwasa filed his complaint yesterday. Rwasa got 24% of the vote, while ruling party candidate Evariste Ndayishimiye won with 69%. Rwasa's filing cited ballots with dead voters' identities, an electoral register which had never been published by the electoral body, and ballot box stuffing. Reuters also reports that the Conference of Bishops of Burundi criticized the election, saying some party observers were chased from polling stations. There was also the controversy over holding the election during the coronavirus crisis. Nigeria's government is under pressure to reopen the economy as fears of a looming recession intensify. Medical experts say this could be risky if citizens do not observe the rules to contain the spread of COVID-19. Reporter Gifta Garriga from Abuja, Nigeria, tells us more.
Many Nigerians are calling on the government to fully resume economic activities despite the sharp increase in the number of confirmed cases of the coronavirus in the country. Medical experts, however, warn that federal and state governments should maintain the slow pace of easing restrictions so as not to jeopardize the gains recorded so far. A public health specialist, Dr. Lars Ude Eze, says the government needs to invest in a massive public health education program before reopening.
My advice to the government is to open up the economy, but with massive health education and effective communication to the people. We communicate the risk to the people using trusted channels and in the language that they understand.
Dr. Sani Aliyu is the coordinator for the COVID-19 response team. He says the government is conscious of the dangers that may arise when the country reopens and is being careful.
There is no country in the world that has locked down and then opened all at once. I'm not aware of it. As you know, this has to do with life and death situations. We are trying to balance keeping our economy working with saving people's lives. And as I said, this pandemic is far from over in the country.
Aliyu, however, said there was need to kickstart the economy as other countries have done. The World Health Organization acknowledges there is a desire to restart economic activities in most parts of the world, especially in countries where daily economic activity is closely linked to survival. The organization has recommended that restrictions be lifted gradually and strategically as the pandemic is going to decelerate more slowly than it accelerated. A fiscal governance expert, Eze Onyekbere, says reopening the economy is a risk the Nigerian government must take to save lives.
Considering that Nigeria is the poverty capital of the world, if we continue that trajectory, many more people will die of hunger and even other preventable diseases and not COVID.
Industries such as aviation, tourism, hospitality, entertainment, and manufacturing have been hurt by COVID-19 pandemic. Nigeria's large oil and gas industry also are suffering after prices have fallen by 50%. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
More than 400 Malawians who returned from South Africa have escaped from a coronavirus screening camp in the economic capital, Blantyre. Test results released Wednesday night were positive for 46 of the escapees, while nearly 300 had yet to be tested. The situation raises fears the virus could quickly spread in Malawi, which has so far confirmed 101 infections and 4 deaths. Lamek Basina reports from Blantyre.
Social media videos showed tens of Malawians jumping over fences at Blantyre Skamuzu Stadium Wednesday morning while police watched. The stadium was being used as a coronavirus screening camp for Malawian migrant workers returning from South Africa, the African country worst hit by the virus. Malawian police said the returnees complained of a lack of toilets and bathrooms in the stadium, then began forcing their way out on Tuesday. Police Service spokesperson James Kadadzera spoke by messaging application from the capital, Lilongwe.
We were told that most of the detainees wanted to go home due to a lack of necessary social amenities. Some were actually seen forcing their way out. And as the police, we did our part to making sure that we contained the situation.
Test results released Wednesday night showed that 46 of those who escaped tested positive for the virus. Another 300 escapees had yet to be tested, raising fears the virus could spread further in Malawi, a country with one of the weakest healthcare systems in Africa. Health officials are trying to downplay those concerns. Gift Kawalazira is the head of preventive health services at Blanda District Health Office. Speaking at a press conference broadcast live Wednesday, he said authorities would easily trace the escapees as they have their contact details.
We must admit it was a system failure, but people can take solace in the fact that whatever was happening on an open air. The stadium is an open air, so the chances of actually you contracting the disease are quite minimal as compared to when if you're sitting in a bus or if you're in an enclosed space.
Kawalazira says authorities have since beefed up security at other screening camps to prevent further escapes of those being screened of the virus. But questions are being raised about how seriously authorities are taking the pandemic after reports that some of those being held bribed police into letting them leave. Police spokesman Kadadzera says they are investigating.
We got wind of the same. So our officers are on ground investigating, but let me assure you that we as a police service, it's our duty to making sure that we are taking a role in protecting further spread of this deadly disease.
Meanwhile, authorities announced Thursday that nearly 600 more Malawians are expected to return home from South Africa over the weekend. 200 of them are expected to arrive by military helicopters in the capital, Lilongwe, while the others will arrive by bus. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyus Muhib in Washington. Here is a recap of our top stories. The family of a South African allegedly beaten to death by soldiers enforcing the COVID-19 lockdown react with outrage. And Burundi's opposition leader, Agathe Rwasa, is challenging the results of last week's presidential elections. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. The government in Tripoli says 26 Bangladeshi and 4 African migrants were killed in an area near Tripoli in a revenge attack. A government statement said that migrants had killed a local trafficker in Mizida near Tripoli, allegedly prompting his family to kill the 30 migrants. Associated Press reports 11 migrants who were wounded in the rampage were taken to a hospital in the western mountain town of Zintan. AP says the Interior Ministry in Tripoli has issued an arrest warrant for the suspected attackers. IOM's Libya Chief of Mission, Federico Sodo, urged Libyan authorities to launch an immediate investigation, calling the incident a bleak reminder of the horrors migrants have to endure at the hands of smugglers and traffickers in Libya. The Gambian government has embarked on a massive COVID-19 food aid relief program that it says will benefit about 84% of the population. As reporter Pandera Mbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, Gambia's Vice President Issatou Touré is concerned about the country's long-term food security.
The Gambia has so far recorded 25 cases of coronavirus. 19 patients have recovered and one died. The country is still on a lockdown to contain the spread of the virus, making it hard for families to earn money to feed their families. Vice President Issatou Touré this week said the food aid program under President Adama Barrow has been for providing the enabling environment, has been one of the biggest food distribution exercises ever done in the Gambia.
In times of uncertainties and emergencies, welfare states provide social assistance to its people through various means. The bailout strategies, although temporary in most cases, introduced to tackle the most pressing needs of the population. The Gambia government and partners in this regard have seen the COVID social response as a national priority at this material time when there is a global economic crisis threatening the livelihoods of the global population.
Toure says she is concerned about Gambia's long-term food security. She warns that given the deadliness of the corona pandemic, the country is at risk of massive food shortages and hunger.
As we move through the ravages of COVID-19, more remains to be desired for. The human cost of the food crisis in times of emergencies could be enormous. With the COVID pandemic blowing the embers of despair, surging unemployment and joblessness could expose thousands of families in the Gambia to threats of poverty and hunger.
Besides tourism, agriculture is Gambia's main economic backbone. The sector employs about 70% of the population. The vice president expressed the need for Gambians to invest in locally cultivated food. This, he said, will help combat hunger in the country.
We must transform our agricultural development process, markets, and how food is distributed. We do so based on a thorough understanding of the issues. That is one of the surest means of eradicating extreme poverty.
The government's food aid had attracted criticism from some quarters. Critics allege the government has been using the food aid for political gain, a charge the government denied. Some communities say they have yet to receive any aid from the government. Toure says the distribution must be done carefully so that food is accounted for and goes to the right communities.
The rice that is bought, we have to report back. That 736 million or above that is spent will have to be accountable to the population, to the public. Therefore, we need to follow procedures in how we distribute the rice. Many people have been blaming us. We've been hearing a lot out there. But those things are because people don't understand.
The vice president said the government is committed to accountability and transparency. For VOA Africa, this is pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The International Criminal Court says Ivory Coast's former president, Laurent Gbagbo, can leave Belgium under certain conditions following his acquittal last year over post-election violence that killed 3,000 people. Gbagbo, the first head of state to stand trial in The Hague, and his deputy were cleared in early 2019 of crimes against humanity, 8 years after the former West African strongman's arrest and transfer to the court. Belgium has agreed to host Gbagbo after he was released under strict conditions, including his return to court for a prosecution appeal against the acquittal. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.